It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up, we'll learn why the head of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is promoting right-to-work legislation, a higher gas tax, and other reforms.
Wisconsin, like the rest of the country, is getting more diverse. According to forecasts by the Census Bureau, by 2043, whites will be in the minority, or less than 50% of the population.
Much of that increase in diversity is coming from the Latino community. Between 2000 and 2010, the Latino community grew by 74% in Wisconsin, and for the first time this year, they are the largest minority group in the state.
As diversity in the state and country grows, many of the places where it's most obvious are in more suburban and rural areas, not big cities.
So, for example, in Wisconsin's Trempealeau County, less than 1% of the population was Hispanic in 2000. By 2010, it was almost 6%. That's a 595% increase in just 10 years.
So as diversity grows in largely white places, how are Wisconsin's communities adapting? We'll be looking at that question. Here with us now is USA Today reporter Paul Overberg. He focuses on data and demographics and recently published a report looking at diversity growth in every county in the country. Also joining us later is Trempealeau County family living educator Catherine Emanuel. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, in your report, you found that for the first time, chances are that the next person an American meets is most likely not to look very much like them. How did you figure that out?
We've used for about 20 years now an index we call the USA Today Diversity Index that basically uses the percentages of people in an area to calculate that. And in census 2010, we found that the national average had reached 55 on this scale from 0 to 100. So basically, on average, two random Americans are more likely than not to be different.
Now, you've been calling this the second great wave of immigration. How big has the second wave been?
Oh, it's as big in some ways as the first one, which ran from maybe 1880 to 1920 or so. It started in earnest in the 70s, and it's still rolling along. And there are as big a share of the country is now foreign-born as happened at the peak of the last great wave in the teens century ago.
If we take a look at the country right now and take into account the second wave of immigration, where would we see it the clearest?
Well, it started more clearly on the coast in the 80s, but then clearly in the last 10 to 15 years, it's been, for a variety of reasons, moving to smaller and more interior places all over the country. It happened a lot in the interior parts of the Southeast for a variety of economic reasons in the 90s, and it's reached all areas of the upper Midwest in the last 10 years.
Why are minority groups and largely Hispanics moving to suburban areas, to rural areas, as opposed to these big city centers, which used to be the magnet point?
Well, it's for one thing, there's an interstate highway system now that wasn't there 50 or 75 or 100 years ago, although maybe in the 1880s that's what the railroads started to be, and in some ways that's sort of the diversity patterns in old immigrants you can still see lines up along rail lines. But there's also economic reasons. Most immigrants come here for jobs. And so, for instance, when we see this strongly, when there's a cluster of jobs that get opened up in an industry that Americans that's hard, dirty work, like often slaughterhouses, you'll see a cluster of immigrants pop up there. It's happened in a variety of places in all over the Midwest in the last 20 years.
This story, it really hits home with me personally. My father was Mexican, my mom is white, and I lived in rural Wisconsin for a few years when I was growing up. And, you know, this was a while ago, and people would be curious all the time about what my background was because I didn't quite look like them. They hadn't, I guess, seen a lot of Latinos before. How much is that changing in Wisconsin today?
It's changing a lot, especially in the western half of the state. Wisconsin is still below average in diversity as a state compared to the rest of the country. And there's some pockets that are fairly diverse, perhaps around Milwaukee. But a lot of, especially western Wisconsin, diversity is still a very new thing. And the levels are still pretty low. On our index from 0 to 100, they may still be around 10 or 20. So it's a 10 or 20% chance that the next person you meet would be different. But those have jumped a lot in the last 10 years in a lot of those places, and Trumbull County is one of those examples. So if you've lived there and that's where what you're used to, all of a sudden it looks very different, even though to somebody from a big city it looks pretty monochromatic.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Paul Overberg, USA Today reporter, focusing on data and demographics. And we now welcome Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon.
Well, based on your perspective, can you describe for us what the growth and diversity, I gather largely in the Hispanic community, has been like in Trempealeau County?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first I'll say that I'm pretty new in the county as an educator. I actually live right outside of the county, so I don't speak as a county resident, rather someone who works with and for people here in the county. And what we're hearing and what we're seeing is that the population increase is definitely off the charts in the state, you know, as compared to not even other counties, but also around the country. The rate of growth in Trempealeau County is actually the fifth largest across the entire country from the last census count. And so really what we're seeing is what your previous speaker was talking about is kind of a clustering around jobs and economy. So, for instance, when you see any community that's got some type of meat factory or meat company, you will typically see a large increase of immigrants. And so here in Trempealeau County, we have Golden Plump, and there are a lot of immigrants that work there. We also have another manufacturing company, furniture company here in town that's also has a large immigrant workforce. So what happens is people kind of cluster around these jobs, families come, and then people either think they're going to work here for 5 years and make a bunch of money and go back to Mexico, or they do what a lot of people do is life happens and you fall in love and you meet somebody and you have kids, or maybe surprise, you had a kid, you weren't planning on that, but now you've got kids here. And so the people that I meet and that I get to work with here in the county are the Latinos that I see are working in healthcare, working as volunteer firefighters, working in the factories, owning businesses, whether it's retail or mercado or panderia, where you can find fresh groceries or the baked goods, clothing stores, working in the schools. And that's just kind of the job. And then there's all the other stuff that happens out of, you know, our work and, you know, communities of family, faith, and social time. So
we're speaking right now with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. We're talking about how some of Wisconsin's rural and largely white communities are adapting to growing diversity.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Has your community seen significant growth in diversity in your part of Wisconsin? And how has the community adjusted? What has the response been like? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up, we'll take your calls. But first, it's the year-end membership drive.
That's right. I'm Gene Purcell here with Cheryl Gasser, and we are in our year-end membership drive on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Your support is vital to all of the programs in WPR, and that is why we are here to ask for your gift right now. As 2014 comes to an end and we look forward to starting 2015 on a strong financial foundation, we need your support, your financial support, to make it happen. You can make the programs you rely on, programs like Central Time, possible when you make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, last hour we received 19 pledges. Thank you so much for your support and for helping us to exceed our hourly goal last hour. And this hour, we have an exciting new member challenge.
We sure do. For each brand new member who pledges, a pair of anonymous donors are going to give us an extra $100. This will be good for up to 10 new members of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a great challenge, and it is those members' way of encouraging you to become a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Couldn't be a better time to become a new member of Wisconsin Public Radio. And don't forget, when you pledge, you will be entered to win two tickets to go on a WPR trip. Donate any amount during our year-end membership drive right now, and you could travel to Washington, D.C., experience the rich culture and food of France, or see Alaska's beautiful coastline.
So we've got that challenge, and we've got that possibility of your winning a fabulous trip, a couple of great reasons to become a new member of Wisconsin Public Radio with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, you have probably found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion here on Central Time. You need to get somewhere in the afternoon, but the discussion, the conversation is just too interesting to ignore. You appreciate the guests' knowledge, the callers' views, and the great questions that Gene and Veronica and Rob ask of the guests and the callers. Because that's happened to you when you're listening to Central Time, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can make yourself feel extra good when you donate to WPR during this pledge drive. Just choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And when you choose Food for 40, 40 meals will be provided to people in need through area food banks.
This membership drive, we're having a drawing for a trip of your choice to D.C., France, or Alaska. When you give, you're automatically entered. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard, or better yet, by making a pledge right now.
You can make that pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Hi, I'm Gene Purcell, back with Cheryl Gasser, and we are here asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is your gift of $10 or $15 a month. The amount that you choose, that's the right amount.
And whether you're already a member or you're making your first ever pledge, anyone can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you want to have that come from your credit card or your bank account.
It's really that easy. It sounds easy, and it is. And because once it's set up, your membership automatically renews, so you never have to wonder if it's that time of the year to make your pledge or not. It's already set in place. So start your sustaining membership right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do indeed get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
And what that means as the single largest source of our income, it means that your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio financially healthy and on the air. So now that you know just how important listener support is to Wisconsin Public Radio, we're asking you to make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
New members are so very important because without you, we would not be able to increase and improve our services as we do every single year. And when you make your first ever gift right now, it shows that you're willing to stand up and be counted as the next member in our WPR community.
And that's right, because you care enough to listen. Now we're asking you to support your source for meaningful radio. Now, if you've never given before, make your first gift of $5 a month or whatever amount is best for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a great habit out of listening to WPR. Now make a habit out of donating. It's a good habit, a great habit, a habit you can be proud of. So get started today. You can help with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org.
And become a member right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And don't forget, we've got that challenge. And when you make that pledge as a new member, you'll help WPR get an extra $100 for each new member up to 10 new members. It's a great time to make your pledge.
And as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount at all today, you'll be entered into that drawing to win two tickets on an upcoming WPR trip. Sustainers, you are automatically entered, so good luck to you.
And so during this pledge drive, during this break, a chance to do two really good things at the exact same time. But you've got to start the process. We can't do this part without you. You've got to initiate that process of making that financial pledge. Go to our website. It's at WPR.org. It'll take just a few minutes. Or if you'd like, give us a phone call, 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're back with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension. We're talking about how some of Wisconsin's rural and largely white communities are adapting to growing diversity. Trempealeau County is an example of that growing diversity in rural Wisconsin. From the years 2000 to 2010, the Hispanic population grew by 595%, according to census data.
And we'd like to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of a minority group that is here in rural Wisconsin? What's that adjustment been like? How has the community responded to you? And how are your needs different, or somehow different, I guess, is the good word, from what you see elsewhere in that community? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can also post comments on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Catherine, we're talking about what brings different people. In this case, we're seeing a large Latino population moving to Trempealeau County. You have a personal story that gets at these same trends. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I do. And sometime we'll have to swap some more stories. I have a similar background that you do, Veronica. I'm half Mexican and I'm half Irish. And my father is Irish and is actually the one who came here to the States in the late 70s. My mother is 100% Mexican, and I grew up pretty close in that side of the family. And my great-grandmother, Nicolasa, came when she was from central Mexico in about 1920 or so. And she came, and she got married to a gentleman by the name of Abraham. They had 9 children, and Abraham tried starting his own business. He had owned a pool hall, which he apparently got caught with one cigarette and some alcohol and a gun, and he went to jail. And so that was kind of fun to read about in the newspaper that I found. But Nicolás actually lost Abraham. He died in an accident, or some people think he was murdered because he owed some money. And this was when my grandmother was then just 9 years old. And so Nicolasa, who was then living in St. Paul, moved most of the children to the West Coast and moved to California and started working at a poultry factory. And she was one of the people picking off the feathers off the chickens, and she worked in a canning factory. And so when I now working here as a professional in a community that has kind of a similar demographic of people moving for economic opportunity, working in a meat factory, I really think a lot about my family and who are those people who were the glue, the connectors, those networkers and the bridge makers to people like my grandma, people like my great-grandma, or people like my mother who my mother and my grandmother were born here in the States, yet still dealt with what it meant to be Mexican and to kind of balance those identities with kind of more of the dominant culture of mainstream America.
And so a long history in your family. For me, I remember the first time that I met someone who was half Mexican and half German, and it was a big moment for me. Mm-hmm. And now things are really changing. In Trempealeau, mm-hmm. where you live, do you get the sense that the Hispanic community is welcome, is been being being included in all different aspects of the community?
Yeah, so I'll answer it by saying I'm hesitant to speak for other people's experiences. I think that what we ought to be asking is when we see people and we build relationships, those are good pathways to open. I guess, so not speaking on behalf of anybody or kind of a group of people, the observations that I have is that there's kind of a mix of, one, maybe people still aren't being seen. And so when we're looking at major community issues or public policy issues, making sure that we're really looking at the data. So, for example, in Trempealeau County, they just had a year-long moratorium on sand, and part of the moratorium was to do a study. So part of that study was to really look at kind of sand mining operations and what is the proximity to vulnerable populations. Some of that research showed that there were a high level of children and also Latinos who lived close to those mining operations. So really looking at kind of the long view of is there anybody who might be vulnerable and making sure we're making strategic decisions that's best for the community. So seeing so sometimes people not being seen, not seeing the data, not seeing people, to people who see this all the time. You know, there's communities in Trempealeau County where you can't go to it and not know that something's happening. So, for instance, you drive down Main Street in Arcadia, you'll see two or three mercados, which is the grocery store, you'll see a beautiful, wonderful panderia. You can go get fresh pan dulce or sweet bread. You can go to a couple places and buy clothes, sockers, dresses for your quinceañera or other cultural celebrations. And so we see also these taquerias are popping up in other parts of the county, not just the main city that has a large amount of Latinos living there. And that's the same city where Golden Plump and the furniture company are located at, Ashley Furniture. So we're really, I guess it's kind of a balance that I see. If some people are being seen and then others, it's, you know, you'd have to live under a rock to not know what's happening.
In 2006, the mayor of Arcadia and Trempealeau wanted to make English the official language of the city and tried to ban flying other nations' flags without also flying the American flag. That didn't happen, but it sounds like there have been some growing pains along the way. What has the response been from the people who were longtime residents there, largely Caucasian people?
Yeah, so I wasn't here in 2006, so I can't speak to that. What I hear is that there was a really strong pushback, really from employers who, you know, said, listen, we can't treat each other this way, and this is not going to be, this policy, these proposals are not helpful, and so we really want to be making policies that are going to really impact the family.
And how about today? How are people responding today?
Well, I think there's a curiosity there. There's some people who see Latinos is kind of another immigrant group that comes in, whether it's Scandinavian or Irish or Germans. And so I see people who are kind of old-timers in the community who say, oh, we know immigrants. We've been doing this for a long time. And then some people who are kind of nervous and afraid to ask questions. So one of the things that I think is really important to do as an educator and as somebody involved in the community is to think about how do we make meaningful connections around some of the silences or the questions that we have, and how do we start building resilience that's going to last for many generations for new immigrants to connect with the main mainstream part of the community and really help make those connections so that people can thrive for many generations and not just kind of live in wonder and kind of live in the shadows.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Catherine Emanuel, Trempealeau County Family Living Educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension, about growing diversity in some of Wisconsin's largely white places.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to the head of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about their ideas to make Wisconsin a more business-friendly state.
And don't forget, it's our year-end membership drive, a chance for you to support these great conversations with your pledge of any amount. You can make that pledge, do something you'll feel good about at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you.
We're taking a look ahead to the next legislative session here in Wisconsin.
Our next guest says Wisconsin is on the right track when it comes to being more business-friendly, but there's still work to be done. He has a list of reforms he'd like to see the Wisconsin State Legislature take up this session.
Our guest is Kurt Bauer. He is the president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. And Kurt, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start out, you published a piece recently at wisopinion.com, and you write there that Wisconsin's transformation from an anti-business state to a pro-business state has been remarkable. I'm wondering if you could talk about that transformation a bit as you see it, and talk about a time frame there. What time frame are we talking about?
Well, we're looking at from January 2011. We've passed, since that time, 90 pieces of pro-business legislation, some of them big, some of them small. They all add up, and if you look at the surveys that we do of our membership, we survey our membership twice per year. We're the state chamber of commerce, so we represent businesses small and large from all sectors and all around the state. And an incredible 96% believe that the state is headed in the right direction. If you also look at the CEO magazine and Site Selectors magazine, we have catapulted in those surveys. And I think those two surveys are particularly important because they're surveys of people who make decisions about expansion and relocation, CEOs and site selectors. So they think we're heading in the right direction, but from WMC's perspective, we shouldn't take our foot off the reform accelerator. We have a chance to continue those reforms and make Wisconsin truly a pro-business and start to see some really rapid growth in the state.
Yeah, and you outline those reforms in your piece at wisopinion.com if people would like to check them out. But let's go down the list. The first topic you tackle is right to work, which is already, you know, lots of controversy about that. Some folks say we don't need to change the current laws. Governor Walker says it would be a distraction. WMC says we need to keep looking at this.
There are 24 states that are now right to work. Most recently, Michigan and Indiana have become right to work states. Iowa and the upper Midwest is already right to work. We anticipate that Missouri and New Mexico, maybe New Hampshire, will also go right to work during the next legislative session. Look, it's really symbolic. We think that there are three different components to this. There's a personal freedom, a choice of the worker, should they be compelled to belong to an organization and pays dues to an organization as a condition of their employment to an organization that they may not have the same philosophical or political belief with. And, of course, there's an also economic development component, and that's the symbolic part, because we do know from site selectors, and we just had a conference in Milwaukee talking about the future of the state, and we had a site selector there from Chicago, one of the most prominent ones in the country, and he said that 75% of the relocation and expansion deals overlook non-right to work states for a variety of different reasons. It's not the only thing that they look at, but it is something they look at. And you don't want to be passed over on 75% of those deals. You want to try and grow jobs. You want to try and grow opportunity. And this is a simple thing that really shouldn't be controversial, because the third aspect of this is how it impacts unions. And we have seen in other states, Indiana and Michigan most recently, the construction unions there say that this has largely been a benign change. And I've got a quote here from the treasurer of the UAW, who said that he actually likes right-to-work states because there's less pressure involved in organizing the union, because you don't pit one worker against another. So I actually think that you can make a strong argument in all three of those areas that this is the right thing to do for Wisconsin.
As you said, though, this is a symbolic thing in many ways. And after what happened with Act 10, it's hard to see this happening without a lot of controversy and a lot of debate on both sides.
Well, I think you're right. I think we need to have that debate. I appreciate you having me on to talk a little bit about it. But unlike the collective bargaining reforms in Act 10, most people didn't quite understand that. They thought that privileges were being taken away from workers. On right to work, we did a scientific poll statewide last spring. 79% of Wisconsinites believe that right to work makes sense. They don't believe that you should be forced to join a union. And Gallup did a national poll, and it was 80%. So this is actually very popular. And then if you look at the data, it's quite compelling. The growth rates of wages, job, and in-migration, and lower unemployment rates favor right-to-work states. You're looking at immigration in right-to-work states. You're looking at lower unemployment rates. You're looking at higher wages. And frankly, they're just getting more jobs. They're getting more opportunities.
Another item on WMC's agenda, it has to do with taxes. And one of the things that you are proposing that you would like to see in the next legislative session is the elimination of the highest personal income tax bracket in Wisconsin. How is that going to help improve business?
Because 90% of the businesses in this state don't pay the corporate income tax. They pay taxes at the individual rate because they're a pass-through entity. They're either an LLC, a sole proprietor, or subchapter S. So you're not really taxing rich people, as some people would claim. What you're doing is you're taxing businesses, and it's a drag on those businesses. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, wealthier individuals. One of the problems we have in this state is a wealth drain. We talk about it when we're trying to grow our entrepreneurial sector, and they complain that Wisconsin doesn't have the kind of resources for angel investing and venture capital. Well, this is one more incentive for people to stay domiciled in Wisconsin as opposed to moving their residency to lower tax jurisdictions like Arizona and Florida, which also happen to have a little bit warmer climate this time of year.
Another issue regarding taxes, WMC would like to see improvements made to Wisconsin's transportation infrastructure, funded in part, I think, by a higher gas tax. The higher gas tax, boy, you talk about controversy. There's a lot of feelings on that one. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gene. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to ask, this is kind of you're coming out saying we need to raise it. Why?
Well, and it's very unusual for WMC. Nobody here can remember the last time WMC came out in favor of a gas tax or a fee increase. And the reason is purely need. I mean, you look at our economy, the three largest sectors, manufacturing, agriculture, and tourism, all rely on transportation infrastructure. And we've got a huge deficit there. We're not alone in this. Many other states, in fact, probably most other states, have the same problem, save South Dakota, because of all the fracking revenue that they have. And, of course, the federal government has the same problem. If we want to be competitive, we have to make this investment. This is very similar to another issue that I address in the column, which is workforce training. I mean, you've got to make these types of investments. You need infrastructure. You need a trained workforce. You need a competitive tax structure. And I think you need right to work. And if you do that, you're going to see Wisconsin really distinguish itself in the upper Midwest as a very pro-business place where businesses will know that's where I want to grow.
Yeah, the DOT has already proposed this as part of their a budget request. Given that, given some of the criticism they've already faced, is this going to be an uphill battle?
Well, and we offered some suggestions to what the Department of Transportation issued. We didn't like everything in there, but we do recognize that you're going to have to make an investment in infrastructure. And we think the way to do it is probably just keep it simple. So raise the gas tax. It hasn't been raised in Wisconsin in at least a decade. The vehicle transportation fee, we're the lowest in the Midwest. And then the governor is talking about taking some money from the general fund. If you do those three things, I think you're probably going to be able to get there. There are some other things that the Department of Transportation offered that we think make sense. There are some other things we didn't like. But by and large, we do think that there needs to be an investment in infrastructure in Wisconsin.
And finally, before we let you go, I want to touch upon mining. You mentioned mining as another area you'd like to see some work done on in the next session. Everybody, of course, knows what happened with Gogebic and the iron mine, but there's a lot of frac sand mining going on here in Wisconsin, too.
Yes, and it's been a real boom, particularly in the rural areas. And what we have seen is that local governments are trying to regulate them, and they really don't have the expertise, and frankly, they don't have the authority. The legislature gave that sole authority to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We think it makes sense for local governments to participate in this. Obviously, they're involved in the permitting and the zoning and noise ordinances related to blasting and trucks. But we think that the DNR should set the environmental standards along with the EPA. We don't want a patchwork. If somebody is looking to make a major investment in the state of Wisconsin, there's no guarantee that they're going to get permitted, but they should at least understand that there are uniform rules to follow.
So this is a pretty ambitious list of things that you'd like to get accomplished in the next year or so, next session. How optimistic are you that it's all going to pass?
Well, that remains to be seen. We put this out there for a discussion piece, and our lobbyists are meeting with legislators. We'll just have to see. We'll have to make the case. That's why I'm on your show, to make the case that these are the priorities that are right for Wisconsin, and they will continue to grow the business climate and you know, create more opportunity for everyone in the state.
Well, Kurt, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
We've been talking with Kurt Bauer. He is the president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He joined us to discuss what he hopes would make Wisconsin a more business-friendly state.
Coming up, we'll find out why Americans suffering from depression aren't getting treated and why our guest says that needs to change.
But first, it is the Wisconsin Public Radio Membership Drive. I'm Gene Purcell here with Veronica Rickert, and we are in our year-end membership drive because this is your radio station. We're listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And right now, during this drive, it's your chance to make sure we're set to start 2015 in great shape. You make WPR programs possible as we head into the new year when you make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And right now is a great time to make your first ever pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Our new member challenge is still in effect. For every new member, a pair of anonymous donors will give us an additional $100 for each new member, up to 10 new members. You give $50, these donors chip in $100. Your pledge becomes $150. It's a fantastic deal. And here's another great reason to become a member right now.
Yep, it is really a great deal. And as Veronica said, here's another great reason. If you give any amount, you'll be automatically entered to win two tickets on a WPR trip. You've been hearing about a lot of those here on the radio, and you'd get to choose which trip you'd like. You could visit Washington, D.C., enjoy a trip to France, or head out to Alaska.
So become a new member now and get entered into that drawing by giving whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During the last segment, we talked with Kurt Bauer from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about some of the items that that group has on its agenda, its priority agenda, I should say, for the next legislative session here in Wisconsin. And that's important because it affects all of us. The topics they're talking about, mining, tax structure, transportation costs, all of those matter to each one of us who live here in the state of Wisconsin. And it's important that you have an awareness of what various groups, what various factions, what different sides of issues think about things like this. And here on Central Time is exactly where you find that type of information every single day.
Your support makes the many topics we cover every day on the show possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget about that new member challenge that's going on right now. An extra $100 for every new member, up to 10 members, and we're almost there, so you could still get in on this. At the same time, don't forget to let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to the people in need in your part of the state. Pledge $10 a month, that's $120 or more, and when you do, choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Your thank you gift, Food for 40, will then provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you.